Unbeknownst to some people, the formative years, usually considered from ages 3 to 9 years old, are some of the most important developmental phases of a person's life. Many parents are unaware that during these years, prolonged periods of media exposure or video gaming can actually hinder the development of their child's mind. Unfortunately, as awareness climbs regarding this issue, many find it difficult to undo the progression that has taken place. How can parents intervene on this issue? The answer to this question and more on today's Return to Eden. Welcome to Return to Eden. I'm Allie Hinson. Today we are going to talk about an invisible intruder that may be making its way into your living room, coming after your children. But first, let me introduce my guests. He's a multi-decade force within the Christian realms of radio and television, chief executive officer of Skywatch TV, Defender Publishing, and Whispering Ponies Ranch. Also my dad. Please welcome Tom Horn.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And she's the chief executive officer of Whispering Ponies Ranch, co-host for Simply His, author of No Fences, It Started with a Plastic Pony, lifelong ministerial partner and wife of Tom Horn, also my mom. Please welcome Nita Horn.
Nice to be here.
Tom, Nita, Mom, Dad, thank you so much for being here today. If you missed last week's show, make sure you go back and catch it in the archives. We talked about parenting approaches and how empirical data has linked certain parenting approaches to subsequent adult success and even difficulty, depending on how you approach parenting. You can make a difference in your child's adult life just by tweaking your approach. So go back and catch that show. But for today, we are going to talk about a digital intruder, which is coming into the living rooms of every single home. Honestly, I would say in our nation, but really it's worldwide. Mm-hmm. And that is media, video gaming, television. A lot of these things operate on an agenda that used to be only for entertainment, and the agenda has switched. And a lot of it is introducing your children to things they don't need to know about. But there's another element, and that is the fact that between 3 to 5 years old, you know, there are a lot of psychological studies that have linked overexposure to video games, to media, to TV, things like that, to deviation in brain development that can hinder a person's operation for life, cognitive operation. So you and I were having a conversation about this a week or two ago, and you were commenting that this overexposure actually can skew the way that cognitive processes within the brain are shaped during the formative years, and can actually have adult ramifications like subsequent chapters of life. So I'm talking about then in adult life, the same child who suffered this overexposure could suffer things like a lack of empathy or, you know, an inability to relate to others, a self-imposed isolation that they don't understand really where it's coming from or how it operates, because this is the only thing they know. Do you want to elaborate on that comment?
Yeah, and here's the thing. For all the good that the invention of the internet and all of that has brought to us. And there is a great deal of good. I mean, we now have vast research libraries that are searchable. We have all these things that can help us in a lot of kind of ways. But neurologists today are also discussing the very negative impact that over screen time stimulation is having, especially on young people's minds, because their brains, their cognitive ability, their ability to make decisions are not developed. And they're being overly influenced by digital influences that largely are not things that parents would even think about. That is, what is the term that I'm searching for here? It's misdirecting a child away from being a human, humanness. I was surprised when I read one of the studies from a leading neurologist on how overstimulation and over, you know, viewing screen time, I'm still searching for a certain word here, but it is causing kids to lack empathy, things like that, that cause you to care for other people as much as you care for yourself. And now kids are finding it so easy to just be online. They're trolling each other. And it's easy for people, like you post a video, and they're going to come on, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about, and they start trolling you and whatever. Stuff that they might not ever say if they was talking to you face-to-face, right? but because they feel like there's this distance between the person they're attacking and themselves, they can be that callous. Well, anyway, kids are learning from that. The other thing is it's causing kids to become depressed because they too are the victims of trolling and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to hit these high standards. They want to be the next TikTok star or whatever. Studies are showing that anything significantly more than 1 hour a day of screen time can damage a child. Now, think about that, because that screen time includes television. Mm-hmm. It includes your smartphone, your iPads, gaming time when you're sitting there playing Nintendo. But these, you know, experts in brain development are warning that we're actually creating a digital pandemic that's worse probably than the coronavirus in the way that it is dramatically impacting an entire generation of young people who are growing up with skewed ideas in their head. And suicide is going through the roof because they're very quickly learning that this isn't the real world. They're left with nothing. I got a few statistics for you. Too much digital screen time leads to obesity. Mm-hmm. So this is just even physical health, like Return to Eden talks about. Mm-hmm. Sleep problems, chronic neck and back problems, depression, anxiety. And maybe what's as bad as any of those is lower IQ tests, lower scores, their intellectual IQ.
Well, one thing I've noticed is that there are studies, again, it's a thing that I'm interested in is reading these psychology studies, and one of the things they talk about is synoptic pruning. And synoptic pruning occurs throughout childhood, but it's kind of a use-it-or-lose-it mechanism that the brain has. And so the brain will kind of prioritize what is being used. And if it's something that's not being used, the brain will kind of shut it down to give more energy to the stuff that is being used. Well, I think about being a kid and doing things that are helpful toward building these interpersonal and developmental skills. For example, I remember playing house. And playing house is more than just playing a game. Sure. It's role-playing. Mm-hmm. So any game like that, you know, so the little girls played house. A lot of times the little boys were playing, I'll be the race car driver. But it's all role-playing. Well, what that does is it develops in this prime time where the brain is deciding what will I keep and what will I throw away, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're putting yourself in other people's shoes. This is what it feels like to be this other person. Mm-hmm. This is what it's like to be on the other side of this situation. Mm-hmm. And they act out these life scenarios, and they take turns. Like, I remember playing with my cousins, and I get to be the mom today. Okay, today I'll be the sister. Okay, you be the neighbor. But you're putting yourself in these different positions, and that kind of just by proximity or by default causes your brain to develop these skills that you don't even realize are taking place that later becomes a mechanism of how would it feel to be that person in this situation, which is where sympathy and empathy come from.
Right.
You know, and so when you're shutting all of these things down, and then especially since the pandemic, there's so much isolation. People are not even going to school as much as they used to, and there's so much that's been moved to online. And so where you had a generation of children who already were spending too much time in front of a screen, and now that screen is their schoolwork. It's how they interact. If they're going to visit with somebody now or have a meeting, now it's over Zoom, so now that's screen time. Mm-hmm. And it kind of detaches the notion of somebody else being a real person. It desensitizes them to the point that if I'm on a Zoom meeting and the only way I ever meet you is over a screen, you're not that different to me than this character in this TV show I've been watching. Mm-hmm. I can be cognitively aware that you're alive and you have a life somewhere and you're not just a Hollywood fictitious character. Mm-hmm. But my sympathy or my concern for you as a person may not be much more than it is for that character, because you and I don't interact on any real level. And that's where a lot of these kids are running into trouble. Then you have this situation where the millennials have been raised largely after this pattern. And I know that I was talking about after the pandemic, and now I'm going to jump pre-pandemic a little bit and say that for several years, the millennials have been called, you know, the narcissistic generation, the me generation. Well, they've been raised with a certain desensitization toward their peers. So that leads to an inward focus. It's not necessarily that they want to be selfish, mean people. It's that everybody in culture is a product of their raising. And this is the setting that they were raised within.
And it isn't just children. You know, it's very disturbing. You can walk into a mall, look over at the coffee shop or whatever, and you'll see an entire family sitting there, and none of them are talking to each other. They're all doing this. So I think it's insidious. I know that makes me unpopular, There are reasons that I don't even and won't even own a smartphone.
This is true. He does not.
It is an absolute distraction. I have one old flip phone you gave me, so when I travel, I will have that. If my car breaks down, I can call, you know, AAA or somebody to come help me. But otherwise, it's left off. I've become a phone-a-phobe. I'm serious. It's like I hate being on the telephone, but I don't like the constant buzzing. And that's, you know, what made me do this was several years before I got rid of my, and that was a flip phone too, but it was buzzing, texting, whatever, 24 hours a day. I couldn't get away from it. And finally, I just said, forget this. I can't even function. This stupid thing's going off every few seconds. And I just got rid of it. One of the best things I ever did was trash can my cell phone. Best thing I ever did. It gave me all my life back, all my time back. And now, if I want to talk to people, well, I still can. I have Allie's little silly flip phone she gave me, and I can use that. But rarely does that ever happen. So it's not just children. It's society at large. It's being kind of fragmented as a result of over-digital stimulation. But then again, doctors say children should limit their screen time to a maximum of 2 hours per day. And a National Institute of Health study found that children who spent more than 2 hours a day scored lower on thinking and language tests. Those with more than 7 hours of screen time experience actual thinning of the brain's cortex, which is related to critical thinking and reasoning. So it's actually literally doing physical damage to your brain if you have over more than 7 hours of screen time. And that's describing the majority of people in the world today. I saw another study where people literally become suicidal if they don't have instant access to their phone. It's hard to even imagine that these stats are true, but on average, literally hundreds of times per day, people are sending text messages.
Well, that's one of the things, when I was doing research for Unscrambling the Millennial Paradox, one of the things, again, you know, some of the stuff that the millennial generation gets picked on for, they're so opinionated, you know, they have to state their opinion about everything. Well, this generation sees 5,000 ads a day.
Yeah.
You have to be opinionated. You're always deciding, am I going to pay attention to that? Nope, not worth my time, not worth my time. You become very quickly, you don't sit and go, well, I want to take 10 minutes to brace you for what I'm about to say. It's just, no, I don't have time for this. And so, it's kind of part of a generation gap. We mentioned last week that the formative years are between 3 and 9 years old. Uh-huh. And there are some studies that make them, you know, a little more broad or a little more narrow, depending on what specifically you're looking at. But this is the era of time that the constructs for your brain, psychologically and emotionally, cognitively, are being built. And by construct, I mean kind of like a mental filter. It's an infrastructure for how you interpret a certain kind of information or data. So people who, during these years, are spending too much time on screen, and this is before we even get into how violent is this content.
Are you
rehearsing someone else's murder on a shooter video game? Like, take all of that and set it aside. You know, these are years that the psychological construct of a child is learning. What does God look like? Mm-hmm. How do I feel about faith? How do I feel about morality? Is it right or wrong to steal? Is it right or wrong to shoot somebody? Pow, pow, I'm playing a video game. You know, there's so much that can be negatively impacted. And I'm not a prude as far as media goes. I'm not saying you should throw your TV outside and not have anything. In fact, when I learned these things while writing Unscrambling the Millennial Paradox, I actually felt really bad because I realized that I was unknowingly one of these parents who allowed my kids to have too much screen time. And I have great kids, so I'm not making a statement about my kids. They're great people, but I felt guilty that I allowed so much screen time in their life. I wish I would have known then what I know now, but that's everybody's song and dance, right? But, you know, there are a lot of really well-meaning parents who are allowing this in their home, and they aren't aware of how it could be impacting their child's brain development, the development of these constructs I'm talking about. And then that's, like I said before, we even talk about what are they being exposed to, which is whatever agendas behind the Hollywood structure, that could be what they're being exposed to. So there are a lot of well-meaning parents who have an invader in their living room that they're not even aware of.
Mm-hmm. I like these old-time board games because it's amazing what you will find. I mean, talking even with adult people. If you've never played board games with a group full of women at a women's deal, have you ever done that? It's amazing what you learn about that person just by the way they enter and approach this game. You find out their weaknesses and their strengths, things you never really would have known just in an everyday setting, but kids as well. This is where they can learn all of these things that this media is stealing from them, is that opportunity to one-on-one face that person and say, you got to go back to the start. I just took you off. How does that person feel when you now send him back to start? You know, you deal. You learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
Or you get moody and you pout, but you learn when you're a group of people, you have to be responsible and you are accountable for your actions to these things in this in the game that you're playing. And I'm just saying, this is just one instance. You're talking about playing house, exactly the same thing. You're learning how to interact and how to you know, divide reality from pretend. And but yet you learn so much about each other. And you learn a lot about yourself, too. Wow, I didn't know I was afraid to do that. Or, wow, I didn't know I could do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you're playing these silly little board games, some of them are pretty challenging. And when you find out you can do them, it's pretty cool. So
it's like a chance to kind of test drive life scenarios in a place that really doesn't have a lot of consequences.
Yes.
If I get mad and I rage quit and I flip the board upside down, you know, I made a jerk out of myself. But ultimately, if I learn that over a board game, and you can say, hey, that's really not cool, you need to be a good sport, whatever, that's much softer than getting mad at work and doing something like that and finding out I no longer have a job because I rage quit and flipped the table during a meeting. You know, I mean, I'm using a ridiculous example, but what I'm trying to say. Yeah, so they're not going to tell you how often. No, just kidding. Yeah. How often I do that? No, just kidding.
Just, those are just, that's just one small example of how all of this media and such is affecting us.
Yeah.
So I think that earlier Tom had said that there is a balance to it all. And I think that this technology that we have is really amazing and has taught us a lot. But I think that there is a time when we need to kind of pull it to a balance and use it for our benefit and not let it to steal from us.
Well, imagine the challenge to parents out there today to know that numerous studies in neurology show that kids should not have more than 1 hour per day. Now, that's a revolution, right? To shut it off, how are you going to get your kids to have less and less screen time? You know, Joe still has young kids. Your kids have grown up. I noticed that he's limiting their access to their cell phones, to iPads, whatever, to something like that, about 1 hour per day. And here's these little kids, and they're going outside, and they're playing in the dirt, and they're playing with cars. And what they're doing, though, is they're actually learning a conflict resolution. Now, there was a large-scale study that reflects something you said a moment ago, and I don't know that you and I have ever even talked about this, but and this was some years ago, but they determined that children form everything that they're going to believe that's important in life. So what they believe about God, what they believe about parenting, what
authority.
They believe about society and authority and all the rest of it, that they have formed their core beliefs by the time they are 3 years old. Now, when I read that, I'm like, yeah, this got to be a misprint. So I did research and found out, no, that there were redundant studies that have shown that by the time they're three, they can't maybe even articulate those facts, but they have formed their ideas. They're there. They're gelling and they're growing. So very young children, they need us a lot. And relying on your, you know, digital games and stuff for these little kids to be playing as the babysitter because the parents are doing something else is really a negative thing. Another one final point on this and I'll move on, but all the time spent in front of screens has negatively affected the mental and emotional well-being of children. Experts suggest that higher screen time and depression could be connected along with an increase in suicidal behaviors and lower one's ability to read emotions in general. And sure enough, as screen times have increased, suicide among children is going through the roof.
Yeah, and that's getting younger, it's, too. It's scary how young that's happening.
Yeah. Right. Now, I'll give you these very quickly because I know we'll run out of time, but tips to reduce screen time. So we don't want to just curse the darkness, right? What can people do about it? One, parents or role models, the next time you binge watch your favorite Netflix series, remember that you're setting an example for your children. Keeping the TV on in the background or scrolling through your phone when you have a spare minute may not be modeling the behavior you hope to see in your kids. These are out of clinical studies. Number two, set aside time to unplug. unplug. Choose a time for your family to unplug from the phone, TV, computer, blah, blah, blah. Number three, use parental controls. And that's increasingly also in schools where these insane people are, well, we won't go into that, but the stuff that they're teaching
kids. We talked about that in Dark Covenant, so if somebody wants to know more, get the book Dark Covenant. We do talk about that.
Right. Like you said a moment ago, man, there is stuff out there you do not want your children's eyes to fall upon.
Yeah.
Encourage other activities. These days, easy for kids to become reliant on electronics for entertainment, but instead encourage them to get involved in activities that don't require a screen, like playing outside, reading a book, or playing a board game. And then another one that they found was very important is keep bedrooms screen-free.
Mm-hmm.
Don't allow your child to have screens in their room. You're going to tell them, shut that all off now and go to bed. Okay, Mom, as soon as you're out of the room, it's on. They're even showing that light in the room at night when you should be sleeping can be very damaging to your health. They're saying pull down the screens to your windows. Even sunlight, but when you're supposed to be sleeping, can be damaging to your health. So those are some of the quick, easy things that people can do. But the bottom line, really, is get involved with your kids to the extent that you can and keep them off of screens to the extent that you can. This is broad-based. These are secular studies. This is not preachers barking at the moon about something that they hate.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing serious and lasting damage to children by overstimulating them with screen time.
I think books, if I may throw this out there, books. And it's because when you're reading books, it takes your mind to a place of imagination. And that's one of the best things your kids can develop is imagination, which is where you got your Nancy Drew characteristics that you now are using to do what you do. The same with all of their other kids, and the same with many of your kids. I'm sure you guys all have stories to relate. I remember when, you know what I mean? So books, but books, books, books. Read them and give them and make sure the kids understand the value of that, because there's so much there.
Create a better vocabulary as well. For the idea of having to mentally draw a picture, you know, that's correlated with better artistic expression. It's correlated with a higher vocabulary. Oftentimes, studies that involve how much a person reads, the IQ scores come up, which is in harmony with the fact that you're saying studies that correlate high amounts of screen time actually bring the IQ down.
Right.
It's really hard in this modern world, too, where so much schooling is starting to happen online.
Right.
So you're almost combating a system that you're also needing to stay in place, because when kids can't be at school, they've got to get their education from somewhere.
For all the benefits that, you know, the digital world has brought to us, and there are many benefits, there's also an insidious side, a dark side, and it's subtle, because it's slow creep, it's mission creep. It starts out, you're just going to let the kid do it 1 hour a day, whatever, and then before you know it, it's taken over everybody's lives. And now you have whole families sitting in the mall. You know?
Not
it's even
everywhere.
Talking to each other.
It's everywhere.
So it's fragmenting families, and it's affecting individuals in negative ways. But there are things that people can do. And here's the other thing is parents will learn that they actually love hanging out with their kids.
Oh, yes.
You know, and I'm not elevating our family over anybody else, but it is just true in the Horn family that we are all our own best friends. We love hanging out with each other. It's like the number one thing we love to do. That can be reality for anybody that's out there. The other side of this, I know we're out of time. I've always been a champion for women. And while the world celebrates the idea of the superwoman who does everything, right? She holds down a full-time job. She's a career woman. She's a mom. She's a whatever. I look at it and I just think, man, we have lost so much in the gender roles of what at one time represented a healthy family. I mean, women are very capable. They can do anything a man can do and usually better. But that's kind of beside the point. I don't think women ought to have to be everything on the planet, including a superstar, in order to have the respect of the community around them. It's amazing to me that sometimes people look down on a stay-at-home woman like she's not accomplishing what her life should be about or whatever.
What you're saying resonates to me, because a minute ago you mentioned that so much of what is in a child for life is there by the time the child is 3 years old. And I've known a lot of women who, right after they have a baby, they stay home, you know, for a few years, and when the baby goes to kindergarten, they go back to work, and maybe they feel really guilty about that, but, you know, it was a financial sacrifice for her to be home for those few years, and then when the child was in preschool or kindergarten or whatever, she goes back to work. Even that amount of time was enough for her to be home solidifying so much in her child that will stay with them for life. So even if you're able to keep one parent at home, even part-time with a child until they're 3 or 4 years old, that's enough to change the whole trajectory of your child's life for life.
I think programs like this brings attention to these very complex issues, but parses it down into language that the average person can understand, and then they can apply that in their life and family.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely true. I agree with you 100%. Tom, Nita, thank you both for being here today. Media, digital exposure, it can be entertaining. It can be a good tool. It can also be something that parents really need to keep an eye on. So I hope that you've learned something today. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Allie Hansen. For everybody in the studio, viewers at home, thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week.
I'm Bree Graffio with Eden's Essentials, and I'm here today with Daniel Belt, and we're going to talk to you today about our Eden's Be Complete. Daniel, can you tell us about our Eden's Be Complete?
Yes, our Eden's Be Complete is a complete B formula that contains all the major B vitamins. It is pretty straightforward as B vitamins go, and I think people are aware that it's important, but B vitamins are water soluble, and we need them on the regular daily life in order to operate many of our functions in the body, be it nerve health, brain health, mood, stress, anxiety, circulation, heart health, just a whole wide range of things that bees are necessary for that we just generally don't get enough in diet. Mm-hmm. And so this is to basically supplement that.
That's great. Yeah, definitely an important vitamin. It pertains to all of those different things and helps benefit them. Can you tell us what makes our Eden's Bee Complete formulation so great?
Sure. Well, the main thing is that it's simplicity and cleanliness. Again, it's a pretty straightforward B vitamin supplement, and the ratio of B vitamins in it is correct. A lot of times they will make like B100s or B50, which are very standardized amounts of B vitamins, and that's not necessarily the right ratios for people. So it's formulated to the correct ratio, and it's very clean with no excipients and fillers, which is kind of the hallmark of our company.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks so much, Daniel. Now, if you're looking for a way to incorporate B vitamins at home or thinking what foods can I start incorporating into my diet to get some Bs, there are definitely some. So we have B1, which is thiamine, and you can get those from vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, legumes, seaweed. You have your B2, riboflavin. You can get some of that from your whole grains, legumes, green leafy vegetables, poultry, fish, seaweed. You have your B3, which is niacin, and you can get some of that from liver, peanuts, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, brown rice, whole grains, barley, almonds, seaweed. You have your B5, which is your pantothenic acid, which you can find in avocados, mushrooms, liver, soybeans, bananas, collard greens, sunflower seeds, lentils, broccoli, brown rice, and eggs. And you also have your B12, which is cobalamin. And you can get some of that from your animal proteins, especially liver, seafood, eggs, some cheeses, tempeh, sea vegetables, brewer's yeast, blue and green algae, chlorella, seaweed, bee pollen. And if all of that seems like a lot or you're just not sure if you're ever going to incorporate some of those foods into your diet, you can, of course, call us at 1-800-652-7168 and order your Eden's Bee Complete today. You can also go online to order. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at info@edensessentials.com. Thank you.